Hello there, this is Bane. When I'm not out on the streets of Gotham hunting the Batman, I find myself listening to Part-Time Fanboy on a regular basis. Be sure to check out Part-Time Fanboy at www.parttimefanboy.com for somewhat weekly podcasts and reviews about various fanboy-related subjects. Also be sure to like them on Facebook and follow them on the Twitter. Do it now, or I'll have to do something awful to your spine.
Part-Time Fanboy.
Part-Time Fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
Fanboy.com. My name is Christian Horn, and this is the Part-Time Fanboy podcast, and I am on the line with Clay Adams. It's Clay, right? Not Christopher, because your Skype ID says Christopher.
Yeah, I'm sneaky like that. I'm one of those weird Southerners. I go by my middle name. So my first name is Christopher. That's what comes up, because it's all official with Skype. But Clay. I go by Clay.
Gotcha. So it's Christopher Clay Adams. It sounds like an old Golden Age comic character. It's a perfect name.
Oh, cool. Oh, good. Anytime somebody uses like all three names, that's like the serial killer, right? Or like the assassin.
That's true.
Right?
That's true. It's more like Golden Age superheroes.
I'll take that. That's a much better connection.
Yeah, I think better than serial killers. I think. So why don't we start at least, what we're here to talk about, at least tell people about, you've got a Kickstarter on right
Correct.
Now. So we'll get to business first. What right. is your Kickstarter just tell the people out there in internet land, what your Kickstarter is and what you're trying to raise money for.
Cool. So, hello people in Kickstarter land. My comic, I am the co-creator of Fried Comics, and right now we are kickstarting a 56-page perfect bound comic book, called Red Xmas, Oh Holy Crap. And we call it a Yuletide special for holiday haters. It's the story of a family. It's a family story, Christian. It's a good old family story, but a very messed up family story. And anyway, here's the pitch. Here's the short pitch. Okay. When Mrs. Claus dies in a tragic toy accident, Santa sets out to make all those little brats pay. Now, a Santa skeptic FBI agent must team up with her wannabe elf ex-husband to save their son and Christmas.
Nice. That's a fantastic elevator pitch.
Thank you, sir.
That's great. It's funny because, I'm looking at the Kickstarter right now, and it is a holiday special, but the delivery is post-Christmas. So I think that's kind of funny, but whatever. If it's a good comic, it doesn't matter when it comes out. So
what we figured it was better to run the Kickstarter closer to the holidays, so sure. people were in the holiday spirit when they were buying.
Yeah.
Rather than like do it back in, I guess we could have done Christmas in July. and then delivered. But so this is actually to collect the first two issues of this series, and it's going to be maybe four or five issues when it's all said and done. So this is a collection of the first two issues. And a few years ago, we kickstarted the very first issue. And we did that. We ran the campaign, I think, like mid-October to mid-November. And we were able to do digital delivery of the PDFs on Christmas Eve. We kind of surprised everybody. And had that little stocking stuffer for Christmas Eve. So I'm not promising that right now, but that's definitely the goal.
Well, now that you've put it out there, everyone's going to be expecting it, and they're going to be
disappointed. Everyone in internet
with the coal in the stocking on Christmas Eve. If you don't get that out there. But that's great.
I've set myself up for failure. That's what I'm all about.
So you did the first issue of this like several years ago? I mean, I know when I looked at the Kickstarter, I was like, oh, it's like a 54-page comic, but it seems like this is the first publication of the second issue. Is that correct? Or am I completely mistaken?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, we're sort of rebooting things a little bit. We had a long break in between the first and second issue. So that's why we wanted to put both of the comics together. We wanted to make this kind of a really special package.
Sure.
So rather than coming back to Kickstarter and being like, hey, we're doing number two.
Yeah.
We wanted it to be like, hey, look, this is a big package. We fully expect that there's going to be, more people tuning in this time. Our audience is a little bigger, this go around. So we wanted to let people, you know, get in, get both issues, have a nice big package. We've got a 6-page backup story, starring our waitress character Frida, who's sort of like our Elvira, if you will.
Oh, gotcha.
So she's got a 6-page backup. We're gonna do a letters column, so you can write in, and actually Frida answers our letters, so she'll respond. And you will have about 2 pages of that in print, so your words will be immortalized for all time. Uh-huh. And then a couple of other maybe fun backup features if we can get some stretch goals rolling out.
That's great. She's called Frida and you're Fried Comics. So that makes sense. I figured it out. I made the connection.
You got it.
I got it. She's a great – she's sort of like Flo after a rough night of meth. Flow from Alice, kind of like after a rough night of meth. She's like really yeah. I mean, it's a great drawing. I really like the illustration. It's funny. And then you have something else. I watched the video on your Kickstarter. Something about a record, like
yeah. Yeah, so we started writing this backup story. I may back up a little bit and give you maybe too much backstory, but we run an online letter column. That's what I like to call it, rather than a mailing list. But Frida writes about twice a month, and she interacts with readers. Readers write Frida. And she responds, and she writes back in this online letter column, and somebody wrote in and requested that we write this story about Frida, mm-hmm. So we put it up for a vote. People said they wanted to see her in a story. Then we voted on the name. So like a reader named the story. It's called Frida, Hard Boiled and Over Easy. And so in the process of writing this story, right, we came up with this with this situation. It really boils down to the story. It's a fight between Frida and a donkey.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things that we needed to do. And you know, you're a creative person, so you know, as a writer, you write yourself into a corner, and then you have to come up with story solutions. So one of the story solutions was that Frida used to live in Tijuana, Uh-oh. Where she performed in a very special show.
Oh my God! I was wondering if this was going in this sort of direction, but okay, go on, continue.
So as part of the story, we started telling the backstory. There's a flashback that takes place in Tijuana where Frida's telling the story of her time performing in show business. And so we created this character, this sort of balladeer that plays this song in the few panels where she's telling the story. So she's telling the story, but also this balladeer is sort of singing this song. So that required me to write some lyrics to the song, which then led to me like writing the song, and now you can get the song as part of the comic. You can get the song. We're also putting it on a 7-inch square record, and taking commissions. You can get a song written about you.
That's so funny. Yeah. I saw the. It's so funny because I'm such a gullible sucker. I mean, I watched your video and I was like, is there really a song that was like that they found and that they're putting on a record that they bought the rights to? I'm like, how much did that cost? How much did the rights cost to that? I wonder. And now I have egg on my face because I'm an idiot. And I was just
I ruined Christmas for you. Yeah. So you got the lump of coal, and now I'm telling you the secret. I wrote the song. Yeah.
It's so painful. I can't take it anymore.
But the conceit, the conceit is that this was a popular song back in the 70s. It went to number one on the Mexican pop charts for a whole week. It was there for a whole week, Christian. Mm-hmm. And this was. This was written and recorded by the Mexican Michael Jackson, Miguel Wanson.
Oh, wow.
And now you can get it as part of this campaign.
Oh, that's great. So you're really going to, at some point, press a record. Is it like one of those plastic records that that's like floppy?
It's actually not floppy. I've got I got one here in my office. I can't see it for all the crap on my desk, but yeah, it's cool. It's like a thick plastic. When I ordered the proof of it, I thought it was going to be one of these floppy things, but no, it's like, you know, if you watch the video, you can kind of see it's a big hunk of plastic.
Yeah. 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 I mean, and not to talk about the record too much or obsess about it, but I thought it was like one of those, do you remember those, like, you would get them like maybe even a comic or a book and you would kind of pull it out and it was like a floppy thing and like you would kind of play it and it was kind of dodgy, but you were like, oh my God, there's a record in a book. Like, yeah. That's great.
That was sort of the idea, right? Because so the one that comes to mind when you talk about this is Nexus. I don't know if you if you're a fan.
Sure.
Yeah. So
I've interviewed Mike Barron on this podcast before. Yeah,
oh, okay. Oh, yeah. I'm gonna have to go back and listen to that because Mike Barron was a kind of a big influence on what we do at Fried.
Oh, okay. Both
myself and the co-writer Alexander O'Philippe. We originally bonded over like Preacher comics, but then that sort of evolved into us falling in love with Nexus and the Badger. Uh-huh. So we reference those stories all the time. So this actually the idea for this record came about from Nexus. I think in like the third issue, way back when, they included a little Flexidisc where I think it was a recording of maybe like the issue. I think they did like an audio version of the whole issue.
Oh, I didn't know that. I only picked up Nexus like later on when it was kind of released in the Dark Horse trades and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Like in the late 90s and stuff like that. And that's how I discovered Nexus. But yeah, wow, I didn't know that they had done that. That's pretty like, that's like forward thinking on their part,
totally,
or backward
was.
Thinking. I don't know what you want to call it.
It was both. It was both, Christian. It was forward and backward looking.
So that's amazing. Have you seen that Steve Rude documentary on Amazon?
No, I haven't, but I really want to.
I started watching it. It's really interesting. I mean, unfortunately, it looks like Steve Rude has had some hard times, but the man is obviously a genius. You should check that out. You should definitely check that out. But let's stop talking about Nexus. Let's talk about what you're up to. So wait,
sure.
you run Fried Comics, and how are you the co-owner, co-publisher, co-creator? Like, what is Fried Comics?
Yeah, so we are proud purveyors of offbeat, irreverent pulp fiction since 2013.
Okay,
and we've been kind of publishing like on our own website. We're on Comixology, we're on Amazon, so I'm starting to post some stuff now. I'm actually posting some Red Xmas to Webtoons and Tapas. So we're kind of out there on the internet. When we've wanted to kind of put things into print, that's when we've come to Kickstarter.
Uh-huh.
We kind of refer to ourselves, Alexander and I, we're the co-fry cooks in chief.
Gotcha.
So we, I guess we're sort of all of those things, like editor in chiefs or, you know, publishers, co-writers, co-creators. I don't know. We sort of, you know, we created this world together with a bunch of fantastic artists, and I don't know, we're just trying to keep this thing going, you know.
So is it friedcomics.com? Can people find your stuff there?
Yeah, absolutely. Friedcomics.com is our main website. Uh-huh. You can also we're on Twitter at Fried Comics, Facebook.com/Fried Comics. But yeah, the main site is Fried Comics.
And so did you start with web comics? Was that like your first sort of enterprise or your first sort of tryout on your website? Or did you go directly into print? Because to be honest, it's my friend Dave Schrader, kind of like referred you to me, and he and I are working on a book that is going to be coming out in February, and
it's fantastic.
Called Baby Badass. I mean, actually, he did most of the work. I shouldn't say he and I. We kind of came up with the idea, but anyway, he had mentioned your books to me a while ago. But to be honest, I had never really kind of checked them out. I know one of them is called. It's called Pregnant Bitches of War. I think that's
correct.
One of them, right?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, and I remember him telling me about the book, and I was like, that title alone is insane. So first of all, how did you get into comics? And then B, what made you sort of want to start your own company, particularly with the way that the marketplace is? I mean, this is sort of the typical question I always ask people who are like, indie publishers or doing stuff outside of the mainstream, or not even mainstream, outside of Image or Dark Horse or whatever.
Sure. Yeah. So I started reading comics at a super early age. I guess I got into it like watching cartoons, you know, like Super Friends and things like that.
Yeah.
And then I started collecting like the action figures, and I remember like the Superpowers action figures. I don't know if you remember those, but they came with little mini comics.
Yeah.
And you could like collect them all. There were like 20 something different mini comics. And like that was the first time I saw anything that resembled a comic book.
Oh, really?
And then I went into it was a drugstore. We had just moved, and we went into an old drugstore, Wender and Roberts drugstore.
Okay.
And they had a comic rack. And it was like, you know, the heavens parted, and I knew I had to pick something up. So I think I picked up like an old issue of World's Finest, but I came in like right at the time that Crisis on Infinite Earths was happening. Uh-huh. So one of the very first comic books I picked up was like the second part of Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow.
Oh, wow.
By Alan Moore. So, like, that's a pretty good place to start, you know?
That's a pretty messed up place to start, because it's, like, the end of, like, everything. Were you just, like, shocked in the pall? Were you like, what? They're ending Superman? I mean, because you probably didn't have any knowledge of what was going on beyond that. Were you like, they're killing they're getting rid of him.
I had zero idea of what was going on, except I knew that I loved every second of it.
That's great.
That story made such an impression on me. And then, you know, then of course, like, then I start seeing comic books everywhere, right? Now they're like at the grocery store, and I go look at the magazine racks, and there's, you know, the first issue of Man of Steel.
Yeah, yeah.
It's totally different from the Alan Moore story, but it's still something cool, and it's coming out like every week or something crazy like that. And, so I started picking that up, and, you know, so like it was just a cool time to be getting into comics, that, you know, with Frank Miller's Batman and George Perez on Wonder Woman. Like, it was just a super exciting time to be reading comics.
Yeah.
And I didn't really discover some of the indie comics till much later, but you know, all the first comic stuff and Vertigo really made an impression on me. So I guess I don't know. Like I always wrote and drew comics as a kid. Like I was that kid that nobody wanted to play with because he only wanted to write and draw comics.
Yeah,
and like nobody else wanted to do that.
Yes.
Right. So it's funny, like talking to other comics people, we're all like, yeah, that's my experience too.
Yeah.
That was just something I was always way into. And then, you know, I kind of forgot about it for a while. And I grew up and I put away the silly comic books and kind of forgot about them, and then started, I saw some of my friends getting into the business, and they were writing for some of the bigger publishers, and it sort of like reminded me that like, oh, this is a career, and like this is something that people do. And Alexander and I, we had written a few screenplays that had garnered some interest, but never really went anywhere. And we were getting kind of frustrated and thinking about what we were going to do. And we had written this, a script called Dead Skins. And one of the final scenes had a group of pregnant women holding guns. Oh. And we were like, oh, this should be our next screenplay, Pregnant Bitches of War.
And so that to me is just like, yeah, let's write a screenplay and let's call it that. But like, who do you sell that to? Because to me, I'm like, just the name alone is like, it intrigues, but at the same time, it's like, yeah, this is going to be a tough sell.
Yeah, well, that's the problem, Christian. That's, we came up with this title, and then we were like, well, you know, we started thinking like, all right, well, wait a minute. How could we make this title like, but actually make it good? Mm-hmm. And so we started spitballing some stuff, and we had so many ideas. We were like, wait a minute, it's not a movie, it's not anything else, it's a comic book. And we thought maybe that, you know, like an indie comic book that, you know, of course, like Paramount's not going to make Pregnant Bitches of War, or, you know, what, a Spielberg's not going to direct it. So we thought, well, maybe an indie comic, you know, we could just do this as kind of a lark. And so we started putting it together and started publishing it on our website, and we got it's funny because we got like really good feedback on it. Uh-huh. And it's been heavily pirated.
That's terrible.
Well, I mean, it's in some ways it's great because people like it. I mean, it's a book that we're proud of. The title aside, it's a good book and people really seem to dig it. The problem is what we learned, and I think it might have been even something that we kind of learned with our last Kickstarter. We Kickstarted a trade paperback of it. Uh-huh. And what we learned is that like people will buy it on Comixology, they'll buy it from our website, and they'll buy it they'll pirate it, but maybe like when they're pledging on Kickstarter and then like your entire network gets a notification that you just pledge to back Pregnant Bitches of War. That maybe that might give some people pause.
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, it's funny because, yeah, I can see how that might happen. I mean, it's funny. I'm looking at your website and you actually have a Glenn Fabry cover for issue two. That must have cost you a pretty penny.
Oh, it was not cheap. Yeah, it was not cheap. But you know what? He sent us a painting.
That's amazing.
That he sent us the original painting. So Alexander actually has that in storage somewhere.
Storage, you should have it up on a wall.
He did, but he's an itinerant filmmaker. He's all over the world at film festivals. So he's put a bunch of stuff in storage and his apartment's up on Airbnb. So
gotcha. Oh, that's great. Yeah, I mean, it's funny because the book that Dave's working on. We had originally thought of starting it as a webcomic, and I had made up postcards for it a long time ago. And I went to a couple of comic shops and I was like, oh, here's a postcard. And you definitely had a couple of people be like, hey, is this, you know, is not. I can't, if it's not like safe, like in every way, shape or form, I can't have it on my counter because I don't want some stray kid like picking this up and then some parent like coming in and being like, and I was like, well, and it happened more often than not. So it's just really interesting to sort of, you know, I mean, talk to somebody else who those barriers sort of exist for this type of thing that's very much outside of the mainstream.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why we've, you know, pretty much confined it to the web.
Uh-huh.
Because like we had somebody who pledged on our Kickstarter for it, and I don't mean to make it sound like it wasn't successful. We successfully funded and we overfunded for the trade paperback.
Yeah.
But I think there was a cap on what we could do. I think with that title on that platform.
Uh-huh.
But there was one guy who pledged. He was a total stranger, and he made a very large pledge early on that actually got us to the funding goal.
Oh,
and
wow.
I was like super excited, but I was like, I don't know who this guy is, you know, and like, not that that's weird. There are plenty of strangers who read the book, but the amount of money that he pledged, I was like, that takes, you know, some stones to give that to total on, you know, people you don't know.
Sure.
And I kept like my spidey sense was kind of tingling. Like, is you hear about these kick trolls who do this? They put down a lot of money and then like their credit card doesn't go through or whatever.
Oh, really? I've never
heard
of that.
Yeah. Oh,
but
yeah.
I haven't run a Kickstarter, so I don't know. Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's a total thing. I've got many stories about that, but this guy in particular, like I checked him out, I sent him a message, and I looked at the other things he had backed, and he seemed legitimate. You know, he had backed a lot of stuff, so that kind of made me feel better. And then one day he did back out, and this was like he had been a backer for a couple of weeks, and he did back out, and I was like, why did this guy back out? What went wrong? Like, how do we offend this guy? Or whatever. And I went back and I looked at his history of things that he had backed, and it was all porn.
Oh.
And I realized he must have somehow, like, he got on our mailing list or something and got the first issue or like saw some of the stuff on the internet and realized that we're not porn. So he was like, well, screw this. I am out of here.
Wow. That is so funny. That is one of the crazier Kickstarter stories I've heard. So he backed out because it wasn't. Oh, that's amazing.
It was not. And apparently, that's a thing. Like, I think there's a lot of porn that gets made on Kickstarter.
Does
and
it
I guess,
really? I mean, it's I, not yeah. like. Oh wow! I had no idea. That is crazy time. Really?
Yeah, I think we probably screwed ourselves because we were like, you know what, we want to be, you know, we do have this crazy title, but we don't want to like go there. We want to make this a smart book and subvert expectations, and we want to play with some tropes, but we want to, you know, turn them around and turn them on their head. But we probably would have done much better if we had just like done straight up porn or something like that, because
oh
there's
God.
Apparently a huge appetite out there for it.
Well, I mean, the thing is the title makes you think that it is going to be something sort of salacious, and it's not like I'm looking at the cover art now, and I mean, there's nothing really awful on there or anything. I mean, not that porn is awful or anything, you know, I'm just trying not to step all over myself.
Sure, sure.
But,
yeah.
You know, I mean, the thing is, I could see how somebody might make that mistake with this sort of thing, especially with that type of comic out there. But like, what in their brain were they thinking kind of porn was it? Like, that's what I'm trying to.
I think it was like a pregnancy fetish thing.
That's amazing. Well, for people who have not read it, because I haven't read it, I have not, you know, this is kind of, it's not the first I've heard of it, but I just never picked it up or anything. What is that book about?
Yeah, so that book, we kind of pitch it as Back to the Future meets Inglourious Bastards, but with pregnant ladies.
That's even better than Red Xmas, but go on.
So here's sort of the short pitch for that. So it's plucked from the time stream by eccentric inventor Nikola Tesla, six pregnant women accidentally kill a young Hitler and unleash a nightmare future. Now with Tesla acting as Charlie to their angels, they must save the world from a hell of their own creation. And they have to do it before their water breaks.
Oh my God. That is hysterical. Wow. I'm just like, the genesis for that is, first of all, that description makes me want to read it now. So I'm going to have to read it.
But, you should check it out.
And you've got a really good review from Brian K. Vaughan on your website. So if you don't know, the author of Saga and Why the Last Man and many, many other things. But like that makes me, I guess, where does the genesis of that idea come from? Like, how does that pop into your head? Were you guys just like spitballing or like what?
Yeah, it was total spitballing, I think. I mean, like, so like I said, the initial idea came from this image of these pregnant women with the guns. And then we came up with the title. And then we were like, well, how can we create a book that like, you know, makes this title but makes it good? And we were, I guess, like our initial thing, I think we always knew we wanted time-traveling pregnant ladies. And just because, you know, something about the pregnancy, like that automatically puts a ticking clock on it, right? Sure. And it's not like it's, you know, it's not like it's 24 hours or the bomb's going to go off. So it's, I mean, you know, it's sort of like the Titanic, right? It's a slow moving, you know, oh no, here comes that iceberg kind of thing. But you do have sort of this time limit. But we knew we wanted to have time-traveling pregnant ladies. And I think our original conception was that they were going to travel through different periods of time and visit different wars. And they were somehow just going to like pop up in these various war zones throughout history. So we could go just to ancient times, or we could go to World War I or World War II or the Civil War or whatever. And we very quickly figured out like that was just way too much work. Like it was just way too much research, too much to know, too much that we could screw up. So then we shifted to this idea that like, well, okay, well, what if they go to like a pre-World War II Germany? Like they kill a young Hitler, like before he's anybody, like he's just some dude. But they, you know, they can't help themselves and they kill the guy. But you know, we always kind of think about that question, like, well, would you, if you had the opportunity, would you kill a young Hitler and like spare all these people's lives? But one of the things that sort of fascinated us was this idea of like, well, how do you know that that's going to make things better? Mm-hmm. Like, what if there's something worse on the other side of that?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's sort of the conceit of like time travel, like that even, right. Or maybe if Hitler didn't survive, somebody else would just take his place or something like that. But
right.
Oh, that's interesting. I mean, that is something that, I mean, time travel, all that stuff, alternate realities, all that stuff is just like way up my alley. So I'm definitely going to have to check this out. But not to spoil anything, but when they have their babies, do they just give up time traveling? Because that would be kind of rough. I'd be like, no, I want to keep going.
So we have
to take my kid to the future and get like an awesome public school education or something, like after the liberal wars or whatever are over. I don't know, whatever.
That's a future storyline. I'm going to write that down, Christian. You just gave us like five different ideas. Yeah. So we actually haven't had any. We've had one birth. Okay. And I don't want to spoil anything. That's a major event in that first thing. But for the most part. And that's sort of an evolving story. So I guess the answer to your question is I can't answer that. But we haven't had a whole lot of births in the series, we will.
So is it a limited series or it's ongoing?
Well, I mean, you know, we kind of stupidly thought that we would do it as an ongoing. I mean, okay. we've got a million stories that we can tell in this world. You know, the problem with indie comics is the economic model.
Yes.
Which is why we're now doing the Kickstarter, because that's a very good way to, one, raise awareness about your books, but it's also, you know, it's also a good way to get people to pay for them.
Yeah.
You have to sell an awful lot of 99-cent PDFs on your website to pay for all the art, you know. Artists are not cheap and deservedly so, right? They deserve to make what they make. And we want to pay our artists well. So that's part of the reason why we kind of slowed down. We produced five issues of PBOW, Pregnant Bitches of War, mm-hmm. so that we could like finish that first story. And we do have more stories planned and more stories coming. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, the idea of doing it monthly, which was our original brilliant idea, it very quickly became apparent that with indie comics, that just wasn't going to happen.
Sure.
I think a lot of indie comics are really doing well if they can get out 4 issues a year.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, maybe we might aim for that where it's like, okay, 2018, we're going to get this storyline done and it's going to be 4 issues. And then 2019, we'll do another one. Gotcha. But right now we're kind of playing in the Fried Comics universe. So it actually all these series that we have, and we did eventually take Dead Skins, which was the genesis of Pregnant Bitches of War. We did make that into a 5-issue miniseries as well. So that's out there also. All of these things kind of take place in the same universe. So Red Xmas is actually, I kind of call it as like an unofficial sequel to Pregnant Bitches of War.
Gotcha.
You don't have to have read that series for any of it to make sense. It's a totally, the story totally stands on its own. But we do have cameos from those characters, and it takes place in an alternate timeline. Uh-huh. So you see where things might end up at the end of that series.
Oh.
And we even have in our backup feature, Frida Hard Boiled and Over Easy, in addition to a couple of characters from Dead Skins, we do get the big bad villain from Pregnant Bitches of War. He also appears, and we get some hints for some future Pregnant Bitches of War storylines.
Oh,
so
interesting.
So there will be more.
So yeah. Have you ever approached like a publisher to do this, or is this just something you want to keep on your own in-house, like Fried Comics, or have you pitched it to any publishers or anything like that? Or
we haven't pitched this particular one to other publishers. I think mostly just out of thinking that the title was going to keep us out of comic shops.
Oh, okay.
But that's not to say we wouldn't do it at some point, if we, because now I feel like sort of the word is kind of getting out there that it's not porn. So I think it could become a possibility, but that's, but I don't know. I mean, right now we're having fun doing it on our own and I don't know. We'll see where the future leads us.
So, I mean, what are your thoughts as far as, because you just said like the title alone would keep us out of comic shops and stuff like that. But what are your thoughts as far as like creating something that has not limited appeal, but might have limited ability to reach the marketplace because of what the title alone is? Like, couldn't you have had Pregnant Ladies of War or Pregnant Amazons of War or Pregnant, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
was
totally.
There any ever thought about that? Or have you, do you think that it might be sort of shooting yourself in the foot in a way? Or were you guys just so enamored with the title and you just loved it so much that you're like, this is what it has to be, like that sort of thing?
Yeah. I mean, we thought about changing it at different points. I mean, I think there's, we looked at, well, what are different slang terms for pregnant women, like pregos or, something.
I don't think pregnant is the problem.
That's true. although honestly, in some respects, the pregnant aspect has been what people have responded to more than the B word.
Oh,
right?
Really?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's something about that combination between the two that maybe some people don't appreciate. But I will say that like whenever we pitched it and we pitched the title, people always laughed. And so we always liked the response. And I guess we just were thinking like, all right, well, maybe this is not the thing that's going to make us $1 million. Right. Uh-huh. So I guess we just weren't super concerned about, the comics market. Uh-huh. And just were more interested in let's tell a story. Let's have a title that that catches people's attention, because it's very, very hard to get attention in this marketplace.
Yes.
And it's not like we set out to do this as a stunt. Sure. You know, but it's one of those things where you go, look, we could have another title that might not get anybody's attention. So we'd rather risk turning some people off. Sure. If we do sort of, you know, get your eye. And I don't know if that answers your question, but yeah, market concerns, it was never really something. We always knew this was going to be an independent comic book, and people were either going to dig it or they weren't. And so far we've been able to keep it going for a while, and we'll see how long we can keep doing it.
Yeah, it's interesting to me because the marketplace for stuff like that, it's not that it's, I don't think it's limited. It's just like so many people get freaked out by stuff and you know, tend to sort of run away. It either, you know, it either sucks people in immediately or there's people that are like, oh, I don't know. I think in my experience, it seems to be people tend to have more of a sense of humor about stuff, but it's definitely the mainstream, you know, sort of, you know, the comic shops, all that network. I mean, it doesn't even seem like comic shops are that open to sort of like indie books that aren't already with a larger publisher anyway.
Right.
I just find it interesting that you would begin sort of like, let's eschew all that and let's go straight to the web, which a lot of people have done. I mean, I have a little web comic that, you know, I do on my own and, you know, it's nowhere near, you know, what you guys have done. But you know, I just it's interesting to me how you would, like, from the genesis of your company, Fried Comics, at first, were you just like, we're just going to take it to the web first and we'll deal with print later?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Because the comic book marketplace right now, I kind of look at it and I wonder if, like, how is anybody making any money?
Yeah.
You know, like, even if I look at DC and Marvel, I mean, they're clearly paying their artists and their writers good page rates, but I don't think those books are making any money.
Yeah.
You know, that's Warner Brothers money that they're getting.
Sure.
You know, that's Disney money that the Marvel people are getting.
Yeah.
So the market for comics is so broken right now that that I think that helped us not really worry about market considerations. But you know, but I also like think that maybe that's always been the case in a lot of ways. Like, I don't know if you have you ever read the book? It's The Man with the Golden Typewriter. It's it's a collection of letters that Ian Fleming wrote during all the years he was writing James Bond.
Oh, I've heard about this, but yeah, go on.
Yeah, it's super cool. And but what's fascinating to me is that the whole time that he's writing this book series, like, these letters are basically him writing his publishers and bitching about how little money he's getting.
Oh my God.
And how, like, he's gonna go broke writing these books, and they have to sell it to Hollywood because that's the only way to make any money.
Oh my God. That's depressing.
Yeah. but it finally paid off for him.
Sure.
And so, you know, I don't think we were, you know, I don't think we were kind of like there in that kind of headspace at that point. I mean, we have sort of thought about that, you know, Pregnant Bitches of War, it could be like an Adult Swim cartoon, right?
Sure.
Or something like that. So, you know, it's not to say that we couldn't take it to another medium, but I think at the time our headspace was, this market is just so broken. And you know, if you're not DC, Marvel, or really Image, or you know, Dark Horse, or those guys, you're not getting in comic shops anyway.
Uh-huh.
So it doesn't really matter what we call the comic, because you know, people are just going to be looking for it online. They're going to buy it online.
Yeah.
And we were just kind of excited to see what that landscape was like.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that, well, Kickstarter seems to be helping a lot of people out. That's the first thing. You know, it's really been interesting to see, like, all these independent voices, you know, spring up. But it seems like Kickstarter in and of its own is like, it's almost like a second job. I mean, my wife produced a play like several years ago, and they did Indiegogo, and it just seemed like so much work. And there's a part of me that's like, man, I got a job of my own. Like, there's a reason it's called part-time fanboy. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like to tack that on. Can you speak to sort of managing that, like, in your own way? I mean, how much effort are you, when was the last time before this one that you did a Kickstarter?
So we did our last Kickstarter for the trade paperback of Pregnant Bitches of War. We did that back in, I think, March and April.
Last year.
Yeah. Of 2017. Yeah.
This year.
So like 6 months ago whatever. And that was kind of, that was kind of ambitious. So Red Xmas is our third Kickstarter. And it had been a few years since our first one. And again, like I said, that's kind of why we were sort of rebooting this title and packaging it together in two issues together. I think what happened was I started realizing, like, we've got to start putting things out. Like, if we're really going to be comic creators, right, you need to start putting things out on a schedule. Uh-huh. So it was really my goal. I started last year with 2016, starting the online letter column, which is now, we're up to about around 1,000 people that that receive our emails. Uh-huh. And I started kind of really building that list and engaging that list and thinking, okay, in 6 months, we're going to launch a Kickstarter and just sort of like get them primed that, hey, like every few months, we're going to have something for you. So we launched PBOW and then we fulfilled it. And then we turned right around and said, all right, let's roll out the next one. And that's going to be Red Xmas right around the holidays. So we're kind of looking ahead to next year and more Red Xmas coming around the holidays, but also maybe in that March, April timeframe, kickstarting something else. But I guess to answer your question is, it is a lot of work. It's a ton of work. But again, like I'm still that kid that just wants to stay in his house and write and draw comic books. So,
sure.
I'm happy to put the effort in. People seem to be responding to it. They seem to like it. And that's what keeps me going. I mean, like if nobody was backing the Kickstarter or nobody was replying to the emails, that would be one thing. But that kind of engagement, that fuels me and that kind of fuels, what we do at Fried Comics. So it is a ton of work. It's a lot of effort. But I love it. So you can't make me stop, man.
No, it's great. It's great. One of the things that I've always wondered about though, like Kickstarter, projects is sort of a lot of the time, particularly comics ones, you tend to run into sort of like a bit of a higher price point for a print book. I mean, have you ever had difficulties of people funding sort of the print copy as opposed to like the digital copy or?
Yeah. So that's one of the things that, that is tough about this. Uh-huh. What I like to tell people is that Kickstarter is not a store. So yeah. It's not like you're walking into the comic shop and you're just buying a copy of the comic.
Yeah.
You're a backer. You're a producer. That's actually what I call our backers. You're a producer on the book. Mm-hmm. So what you're doing is you're becoming a part of this thing. You are now a part of Fried Comics and you are helping to get this made. And in exchange, we're sending you a reward.
Sure.
And so it's not quite the same as going to the comic shop, but what I also try to explain to people is that, particularly with where we are, we're not doing huge print runs. Mm-hmm. So like Image or DC or Marvel, they can afford to sell a single issue comic book for say $4 in the store, or maybe Image does a trade for $10.
Sure.
And when they do that, they're doing that at a loss. Mm-hmm. It's a loss leader. So they're not making any money off of it. Part of the point of doing the Kickstarter, right, is to actually raise the money to make the thing. So we can't take a loss.
Yeah.
Because we can't afford to do the larger print runs, because what happens is once you do a larger print run, then suddenly the price per unit goes down, so that your profit margins get higher.
Yeah.
Because we can't afford to do those huge runs, we're having to print digitally and what's called print on demand,
sure,
which is considerably more expensive.
Oh, okay.
So because of that, I mean, really, like, so for right now, the print copy of Red Xmas that we're selling right now is it's 56 pages, perfect bound. So it has a spine. So it's like a book. And so that's going for $25. Uh-huh. And basically, we're making very, very little money off of that. Yeah. In fact, it would be better for us if you just bought the PDFs, right? Because the digital rewards, because then we don't have to print anything and send it to you.
And are you happy with that? Like if you didn't have to print it up, I mean, I want people to fund your book. I don't want you to be like, no, just pay for the PDF and not the, you know what I'm saying?
No.
Like,
I would love people to have the book to put on the bookshelf. And so why we, you know, that's why we're making that reward.
Don't buy the book. Don't say that.
No. That's not what I was trying to convey. What I was trying to say was that it looks like it's a lot of money.
Yeah,
but it's actually less money in our pockets.
Yeah.
But you are getting that book to put on your bookshelf, and we are happy to give it to you.
Yeah.
But I guess my what I'm trying to say is nobody's getting rich off of this. It's not like we're gouging you on price. It's just the reality is we do have to charge a little bit more than DC, Marvel, and Image would.
Sure.
Because it's just part of the beast. So so yes, please buy the book. Don't.
But it must be hard to compete against like stuff that's in comic shops, right? Or do you think Kickstarter is sort of like its own community of fans who like to fund like indie stuff?
Yeah, it's totally its own community. And it's not, I don't think we're in competition with the comic shops because they're very different beasts.
Uh-huh.
And like, we're not even in competition with other Kickstarters. You know, there's a great community that's grown up around the comics Kickstarters. And by and large, everybody's extremely supportive of each other.
Sure. Oh, that's great. That's really good to hear. What about, I mean, you have your website, you have like Facebook and stuff like that. Do you guys go to conventions a lot? Do you do cons? Do you sell printed copies like at conventions or?
Yeah, I've actually never tabled at a con.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Get out of here, really?
Yeah, for
real. How did you and my friend Dave meet?
Oh, so Dave produced a movie that I acted in way back in the day, like 2005 maybe.
Okay.
I was actually living in New York, and I was doing some work on a soap opera called As the World Turns.
Oh my gosh, and, like acting?
I was acting.
That.
Yeah. And Keith Kaloris, the director of this film that Dave was producing,
I know Keith.
Yeah. Oh, you know Keith. Okay. Yeah. So his wife at the time was on As the World Turns in New York. And I guess she heard him saying like, I can't find anybody to play the lead in my movie.
Yeah.
And she was like, you know what? I know a guy that I think would be great. Why don't I put him on tape? And, you know, I'm sure he'd go out there and do your film. So I got put on tape. I got cast, flew out to LA from New York and acted in the film. And Dave was a producer and a beautiful friendship was born.
Yes. Oh, that's great. So you haven't tabled at cons.
I've never tabled at cons. Only because we have been so web focused. I mean, for the first few years of our existence, we didn't have physical copies.
Uh-huh.
So to go, you know, to pay all the money to table at a con and then have to like put some stuff into print, that was sort of prohibitively expensive. But I do go out, like I go out to San Diego Comic Con and you know, hang out there and talk to people and network and walk the floor.
Sure.
But I've never actually tabled. So part of what we're hoping to do is once we do get some of this stuff into print is that we can then go to a con and sell some stuff.
Oh, that kind of blows my mind because you're sort of playing with the – because, you know, I mean, he and I did a convention, Long Beach, like a couple years ago and stuff like that. And you run into like a lot of these professionals or, you know, people that are doing stuff. And it seems to me like it seemed to me, or I understood, it seems that that a lot of social media, it's very weird. It seems like you have to be out there. Like the whole promise of the internet, right? Like when it kind of first started was that A, it would be sort of like the great equalizer. That's the first thing, right? And then B was that you could sort of achieve some sort of notoriety for things and not have to be out there schlepping and you know what I mean? And like, and you know, the con life, that's hard. Like, you know,
it's tough.
A lot of people that I've met, you know, they're always traveling and you know, you got to pay to go to the conventions and you got to pay to ship your books and you got to, you know, and I've talked to a lot of people who are like, dude, I lost money on this. Like I didn't make any money. And there's definitely a lot of point, you know, for me, you know, I have a family and stuff like that. So there's a part of me where it's like, how are you? You know, how can you do that? You know what I mean? Like there's, you know, I mean, not that it's all about money, but still, like if you're paying to go to, you know, schlep around and you're not making. So anyway, my whole point is like, it's kind of like you're blowing my mind or my expectations of like what is necessary to sort of build a, you know, successful sort of comic base because you're saying like you've never tabled, but it's been my experience. Like it seems like the people with the most Twitter followers or whatever, you know, they have to go out there and schlep for those Facebook friends or Twitter followers or Instagram followers. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. And that's actually, so I'm a guy that like doesn't like to do what other people are doing. Like if you zig, I gotta zag.
Me too.
So. So I guess it goes into like titling the book Pregnant Bitches of War, you know, like, we just want to do something different. And so I never wanted to get out there and go to cons and lose money because it to me, the economics were poor. Yeah. And you know, we're artists and writers and, you know, a lot of these people don't have a lot of money to begin with. So, so it just it, like, I never saw how to make it work. So, so I never did it. And if I thought I could make it work, I would do it. And I realized that, you know, there are like, for instance, my friend, Kevin Joseph, he writes a book called Tart and he had a campaign for, I think the sixth issue of his series that just ended. Okay. Now I think he does a lot of cons. He's based in Florida, but for instance, I met him at San Diego Comic-Con. Now I knew him online, but we met in person at San Diego and he was tabling at San Diego.
Oh, wow.
Which is not cheap.
No.
But he, you know, he's been working the cons, but he just had this campaign and, you know, got like 500 backers and raised like 12 grand. And so he did extremely well. And so, like, I don't know how much of that comes from going to cons and meeting people. Like, I'm sure that all helps. I've always been more content to be maybe a little bit smaller, but maybe have a little more money in my pocket at the end of the day.
Gotcha.
But I look at the campaign that he just did, and you know, now I don't know the finances of what he's paying out. You know, to his artists or, you know, is that 12,000, is that break even? Is that he's making a little bit? I don't know, but because the economics of this business are so bad, I've just been more content to sort of, to maybe follow the model of like the Amazon Kindle millionaire. You know, who doesn't go to conventions, you know, but who has the mailing list and who builds the following and has those loyal readers that are there every time they launch and then they go out and buy the book. So that's really more what I'm trying to model my business on, because that sounds to me like a lot better than losing money.
Gotcha. So before we sign off, because we're coming up on an hour and I don't want to take up more time than you've already given me or been generously, you know, taking your time out of your evening. And I know it's late on the East Coast where you are, but you didn't mention anything about your artist. This the same artist as Pregnant Bitches of War or is it a different art? Fabio Ramacci?
Fabio Ramacci. So Fabio, we discovered him on Reddit.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so the artist who did the first issue of Red Xmas actually is the guy that drew our first issue of Pregnant Bitches of War.
Oh, okay.
But then he got very busy. He got hired by Marvel and DC, and frankly liked their paychecks quite
sure.
a bit.
Sure.
So we were forced to find a new artist for this issue too. So I discovered Fabio on Reddit. There's a comics collaboration subreddit, and I just kind of posted, "Hey, we're seeking an artist. We're trying to sort of match this style. Can you who's interested?"
Yeah.
And we got a bunch of responses. But Fabio wrote us this great email that was very long.
Uh-huh.
And I'm usually the kind of guy that's like, get to the point, just short but sweet, get to the good stuff. But he wrote us this very long, very charming email about how he's always wanted to draw a book like this, that he would kill to draw this book.
Oh,
and,
wow.
He was like, I'm going to be honest. I don't really match the style 100%, but I'm willing to do a test page for free.
Nice.
And it's that kind of passion that you want to work with people that want to work with you and that want to connect the material. And that was kind of like we just knew that this, just seeing his samples, we knew that he was a professional, great artist.
Sure.
But having that passion really kind of sealed the deal. And he did a test page and it was incredible. And, it was a good gamble on his part because we wound up paying him for that test page because we used it. So he got the job and he has been a dream. He's a super nice guy. He's an extremely talented artist. He's fast. He's communicative. He's all those things you want in an artist. So
that's great.
We're super psyched to have him on board.
That's awesome. Well, thank you very much, Clay, for coming on to my podcast. I really appreciate it. How can people, I know they can go to Kickstarter, but what search terms should they exactly use to find your project on Kickstarter?
So I have a pretty link I can give you. It's friedcomics.com mm-hmm. / Red Xmas.
Oh, okay.
REDXMAS.
Awesome.
And that'll take you right to the Kickstarter, friedcomics.com/redxmas.
Awesome. Well, cool. I really appreciate you taking the time coming on. This project looks great. I'm going to have to track down the Pregnant Bitches of War and what was the other one? The
Dead Skins.
I'm going to have to track that stuff down. David mentioned it to me a long time ago and I was just like, what? That sounds weird. I've got a little girl at home, but I'm definitely going to have to check it out at some point soon because really giving it the look over, it really does look like fun stuff, and it's
cool, man.
And it's not porn, so that's good.
It is not porn. And to anybody who is interested in reading the other books, Pregnant Bitches of War and Dead Skins, we do have them as add-ons to the Kickstarter campaign. So if you back Red Xmas, you can always throw in a couple of extra bucks and get some other books.
Cool, awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on to Part-Time Fanboy, Clay.
Yeah, really, Christian, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I've been on the line with Clay Adams, and he is the co-creator of Fried Comics. Please go to Kickstarter and check out his project, Red Xmas. Oh, holy crap. It looks like it's going to be a blast. I am going to sign up and back this project as soon as I get off the line with him. It looks great. It comes with my highest recommendation, even though I've not read a bit of it, but I definitely want to check it out. It's got me intrigued.
Awesome.
Thanks to my friend,
man.
David Schrader, for hooking us up. And my name is Christian Horn, and this has been another episode of Part-Time Fanboy. Check us out on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. And if you would like to email us, drop us a line at ptf@parttimefanboy.com. Thank you for listening. And once again, Clay, thank you so much for joining me on this episode.
Thanks for having me, man.
Cool. All right. Take care. Bye.
Part-Time Fanboy.
Thank you.
part-time. Imagine me part-time. Part-time fanboy.